Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest today is Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine is an investment advisor. She's an entrepreneur, a former assistant HUD commissioner under the senior Bush administration. She's also a former managing director and board member of the Wall Street firm Dillon Reed & Company. She now is the editor of Solari.com, and she runs Solari, Inc. It's an online company focused on ethical investment and preservation of family wealth, and I can't think of a time more than now when we really need that kind of advice. She also hosts the 3 times a month Solari Report. We'll talk a little bit about the one most recent report she gave last night, third quarter wrap-up. It's a one-hour conference call by subscription. It exposes how we're being tricked and what we can do to protect ourselves. Catherine explains how, what's going on, and how it affects our money, our health, our safety, and again, what we need to do in self-defense. And if we don't do it, the people harming us sure won't do it for us. They want to do it to us, not for us. Catherine, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, Catherine, it's great having you. I enjoy listening to you so much on Flashpoints Radio, Pacifica's KPFA station. Were you on this week?
Yeah, I do. I do a short segment every week called Community Business.
Were you on on Wednesday?
Yeah, we do it on Wednesday. This week, Dennis Bernstein, the host of Flashpoints, was having a fun drive.
Yeah.
So instead of doing it, we did a little Community Business, and then we did some fundraising.
I listen to the program as often as I can. I listen to archives, which is about the only way I can fit it in to everything else I'm doing. But it's not posted on their website. So far, I can't access your latest program. I will have to send an email to those folks and say, please post the program so I can listen.
Well, the amazing thing is when I did, back in 2002, I got a call from Dennis saying I want to do a series or I want to do a show on Enron. And I didn't know Dennis. I didn't know Flashpoints. I had done a show with Carolyn Casey of KPFA. And so Dennis called, and it was the most amazing thing, Steve, because, you know, my company had been targeted by the Department of Justice and accused of financial fraud when it was widely known and certainly well known after the investigation started that we were clean. And so I had lived through the Department of Justice giving their different legal explanations of why they could do this or that or this or that or this or that. So when Enron came along, I had an encyclopedia of knowledge about Department of Justice procedures in a case of financial fraud and all their powers and everything they could do.
And they could do plenty, as you know.
They could do plenty. So Dennis called, and we just started walking step by step. And it had been right after California had been completely targeted and taken down by Enron, so there was tremendous interest in California. Well, it blew up into a 7-series show that rolled up into a national show. It was called Enron, Anatomy of a Cover-Up. And it's very sort of detailed in the mechanics of how these kinds of investigations and prosecutions work. And it really does show that, you know, something, they didn't begin to do what they could be doing.
Oh, indeed.
Well,
not.
There's the music, but I'll tell you how it comes back to what we were talking about Wednesday and what you and I want to talk about.
Oh, indeed, Catherine. Let's take that break, and we'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome back to the News Hour. Catherine, I'll let you finish up, but I'll mention one thing that I don't get into a radio studio very often, but I have been to KPFA. I've met Dennis.
Uh-huh.
I've met Nora, and I was there a year ago on September 10th I was interviewed on another program, Bonnie Faulkner's Guns and Butter, another
terrific program.
Yeah. Of course, I sat there with Bonnie, and I sat there with Dennis and Nora for a while the afternoon of September 10th while they were, I wonder if they go through this every day. They looked like they were going through a maddening period of scurrying to put their program on later that early evening.
It's amazing what they bring together. Yeah, it's incredible.
Well, they were also wondering, who the devil are we going to get on tomorrow, September 11th? not an ordinary programming day. I think they got David Ray Griffin to come on.
Yeah, they it's amazing. You know, they just have to pick up the phone and call, and they're people are delighted to come onto that show.
I can't book on that short notice. I mean, people like you are busy. I need to catch you well in advance. Because you can be doing anything, you can be anywhere.
Yeah.
So I schedule well, and if I had to put together a program 3 hours before I went on the air, I would go absolutely nuts. But anyway,
I was censored on KPFA. I'll tell you this story. It's quite funny. Let me finish the. So anyway, so we did this whole series on Enron, and then Dennis invited me to come out and speak, and what I got was just a flood of questions about, if the corruption is this bad, what does it mean to my 401k? What does it mean to my IRA? What does it mean to this, that? You know, thousands and thousands of personal finance questions, just the flow of them. And one of the things I discovered when I got all those questions is that people really didn't understand that they were financing everything they say they hated. You know, so all the folks in California, if they'd looked in their mutual funds, they would have discovered that they were financing Enron and making sure Enron got a low cost of capital. So part of the question for me was, how can I help people protect their assets and their family wealth? And before they do that, they need to have a framework of what they're going to do and how they're going to do, which means they need to see the game. They need a map. They need to be able to navigate. Because it's no good if I can just answer the question. They need to be able to answer the question themselves every day as things bob and weave and change. So I tried, it eventually resulted in me becoming an investment advisor, Stephen, because I just, so many people needed a way to navigate the system. And it's why I encourage people to organize and do what I call Solari Circles. It's kind of a financial action club. Because we need, as a society, to get literate about finance and our assets, not just as a financial matter, but as a political matter. You know, where is our money going? What is it doing in our name? Who are we financing? You know, when you finance your enemies, there is no hope.
I agree with that.
Yeah, so part of it is, how can I shift my money, and how can I do it in a way that preserves and grows my family wealth? And so that is the topic that I became, very personally fascinated in, and it grew out of just describing to people what the corruption was like.
Yes, and I think today more than any other time that I can remember, looking way back, and long ago I was a kid, too long ago to remember. I mean, indeed too long. I mean, I remember Franklin Roosevelt, so that was a long time ago. World War II, I have a vivid memory of, no TV, but radio reports my dad used to listen to every night when he came home from work. So I couldn't wait for the war to be over so there'd be something else on the radio. I forgot the point I was going to make. The hazards of today where our wealth really is in jeopardy because of what's going on. I mean, the bandits on Wall Street getting away with their banditry, the government not only turning a blind eye, but I'd like to see it as a partnership between government and Wall Street funneling our money to them. And if we don't know how to protect ourselves, our wealth will dwindle away. And they're so clever, we won't even realize that we're losing it until
it's
gone.
My overview is this. A decision was made in the mid-90s to kind of give up on the United States and the current governance structure and to shift, very significant amount of capital out into the emerging markets. And America was kind of just, or the middle class was kind of left behind. And there was no conversation or discussion about, is this a policy we ought to do? because it was, you know, American government and the central bank were at the heart of implementing it. And a decision was made to just use the housing bubble and the debt bubble to kind of lull the middle class into, you know, into thinking that things were fine. You know, they kind of, we kind of all sort of went into a trance. And part of it was the dumbing down. You know, I knew we were in trouble when you turn on the morning news shows and they were all about cooking. You know, I don't know if you remember, but the Today Show used to talk about what's going to happen today, what's in the news. Now it just shows you how to, you know, cook Thanksgiving dinner.
I gave up on those programs. I can't remember how many years ago. I do media critiques too, Catherine.
Uh-huh.
And I do need to monitor a little bit, but it's a very, very painful experience
for
me. Well,
I gave away my TV in 1984. I haven't had a TV since 1984. A couple of people have tried to buy them and stick them in the house, and then I give them away.
You're like Ralph Nader. He has a screen. He doesn't even have a computer, believe it or not. He has a screenless home. I mean, I'm astonished about that. TV, I can understand. There really is nothing much on it at all.
Well, I think it's safer to have a screenless home. You know, I think these things, you know, you're dealing with entrainment technology, subliminal programming. So I can understand why somebody would want to have a screenless home.
Well, I couldn't do what I do if
right.
that were the case. I mean, I
right.
need a computer to write. And,
right, same with me.
Oh, I mean that is so crucial. But you
uh-huh.
developed a regular program on KPFA. I love what Dennis and Nora do. They really do heroic reporting, the kind of reporting I wish proliferated all over the place, but there's not enough of it. And I must say the one segment I want to hear more than any other is your segment on Wednesday, usually on Wednesdays.
Well, you know, I was censored. I was thrown off of KPFA for a couple months.
I heard that story.
Up on my blog because when they did it, you know, we were coming into a really tense time with Fannie and Freddie being taken over and the housing bill passed. And right before then, they threw me off. And it was a wild situation. And so I decided to dig in and do an analysis of who KPFA's bankers and how their financing work and posted it up on my blog. And one of the reasons was they said, I think Dennis was going to use I have an audio seminar, Positioning Your Assets for Growth in Uncertain Times. And one of the reasons they said was, you know, this was promoting a for-profit business. Well, actually, you know, what was happening, it was generating premiums and revenues for them. But what was interesting was the notion that teaching their listeners how to protect their assets from these guys was considered to be somehow not acceptable. And, you know, it just goes on and on and on and on. There's so much hypocrisy about helping people with their money and illuminating how the money works, because one of the most important control mechanisms of the what I call the pro-centralization team is controlling the financial system and keeping people in the dark. I always, you know, sometimes I'll run into activists who say, money's evil, I don't want to learn about money, you know, get away from me. And I'll say, oh, no, what you're doing is you're making sure the money stays invested in their world, because you're saying, we won't create a world where that money, you know, where people's retirement savings is welcome to come and fund and be safe.
Well, that's exactly right, Catherine.
Right.
I remember when you were off for a little while, I had no idea what was going on. I thought you were off doing other things, and then I heard the story briefly on air.
Uh-huh.
That really isn't in the original tradition of Pacifica Radio. To me, they're the legitimate public radio, not national public radio. But still, I mean, Dennis's program will not be picked up by some of the other Pacifica stations.
Really?
Too hot to handle. And I think one had it on. I think, it might have been the Houston station, and they pulled it.
Uh-huh.
And when they had it on, they didn't have it on at a good hour. I think they had it on around 11 o'clock at night to get
yeah,
a smaller audience.
I forget whether it was Pacifica or not, but I know when we did the Enron shows, I would do stuff on Enron, and it would get, you know, affiliates would get shut down in Dallas and Houston. I think that happened on Coast to Coast.
Well, so far nobody has shut me down because of what I say, or the people I bring on, or what we talk about, Catherine. Certainly hope it doesn't happen, because I want to hit the most hot button topics. What other people may fear to talk about is what I most want to talk about. So let's get at the heart of 9/11.
Okay.
Let's get at the heart of the financial economic systemic crisis. I mean, let's tell it the way it should.
Well, there is no crisis. We don't have any economic problems. We really don't. And let me explain what I mean. I have a Solari Circle that I'm a member of, and it was not that long ago we decided that we would see if we could come up with an investment strategy for the planet. We said it's one thing to criticize Mr. Global, but if we were in Mr. Global's shoes, what would we do? You know, so we're just kind of playing a game and simulating. And so we talked and talked and then decided, okay, well, if we had the optimal investment strategy to optimize total wealth on planet Earth, and that total wealth was a number, how would that total wealth compare to current wealth? And what I decided was current wealth, my estimate was current wealth is less than 1% of what it could be. Less than 1% of what it could be. So this is an abundant planet. We have incredible technology. There's no reason for anyone to suffer from poverty at all. And let's talk about how we get there.
We'll do that when we come back. We want to talk about the Solari Report. And
this is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Hour. I'm on with Catherine Austin Fitz. Catherine, I want to let you finish your point and then get into the Solari Report. I agree with you that there is no reason that even with the big population around the world, I think the world could accommodate a lot more people, and there's no reason for anybody to be in poverty. The problem is that the people at the top want all the benefit of the resources for themselves. They don't want to share it.
Total control.
Absolute total control. And no matter how much they have, they want more. I think it's a disease. There's no way to be satisfied. And I guess they compete with each other, too. A CEO of one corporation looks at a competitor, and are they getting bigger than I am faster? Well, you know, we have to do more to catch up. We need more sales. We need more profits. We need more plunder and exploitation. I mean, that's the only way to get it.
Yeah, but let me be a bad guy now, because it's not just the CEOs of corporations. You know, in America, it's been the crowd. That was the remarkable thing about the bubble, because, you know, sort of the vote of the American people was for a little bit more, I'll go along and support this. I'll tell you a great story. I was in... one of my favorite pastors is T.D. Jakes, whose ministry is in Dallas. And I, in the summer of 2000, I was at the Women Thou Art Loose conference in Atlanta. So there I was with 100,000 African-American women in the Georgia Dome, another 250,000 people coming in by internet and monitors at a variety of different installations. So, you know, maybe 350,000 people listening. So T.D. Jakes brings in, it's the summer of the presidential election, he brings George W. Bush in by monitor, and 100,000 African-American women jump up cheering, including a minister that I was studying spiritual warfare with at my church. And interestingly enough, she had worked at the DEA, and there wasn't anything about Bush family, you know, criminal doings that she didn't know about. And a very educated woman in the ways of the world. And so afterwards I said, you know, Patricia, I just gone through the litigation with the government. I was in the middle of it. I said, I just lost all my equity, $6 million in cash, and almost lost my life trying to stop, you know, or illuminate Clinton and Bush family narcotics trafficking and all sorts of wrongdoing. And you just jumped up and cheered for George W. Bush. And she said, well, he's going to win. And I said, so he's a winner and I'm a loser. And she said, yeah, that's right.
Oh, dear. That really is a shocking story. I just can't imagine.
It's a very, God love her, she was honest. You know, in America, we're busy. We don't have much time, so we vote for, we support the guy who we think is going to win, not the guy we agree with ethically. That's how it works. So we're all a prisoner of the model, so it's not just the CEOs. Because, you know, I've met and worked with tons of CEOs, and they're men who operate, and women now, who operate with very little freedom. I mean, we're all a prisoner of the model, and we're all a prisoner of the system, and that's what we're struggling with. How do we change the model from a win-lose model to a win-win? And part of our challenge is, the guys at the top want total physical control of all the resources. That's what they perceive as being their least risk strategy. If I had to, if somebody said to me, look, I can only watch one DVD to understand how the world really works, what would that be? I would tell them, and it's up on YouTube, Sir James Goldsmith was trying to stop the implementation of the new GATT round in the creation of the World Trade Organization, and in 1994 gave an interview to Charlie Rose. If you go to my blog at salieri.com/blog, you can pull it up. I've got the YouTube video up, and I've also transcribed a lot of the quotes from it. And he gave an interview to Charlie Rose, and in that interview he explains what's going to happen, that literally the industrialization of agriculture is going to shift 2 to 3 billion people off the land into the cities, and it's the most frightening movement or policy decision in the history of our planet. And it's quite extraordinary because it shows you how intentional this all is. It's really quite intentional. And that's why when I described my Salieri Circle sort of strategy discussion, when we decided that the current wealth was significantly less than what was possible, we said, okay, well, If we're going to change things, we need to understand what's the action that we could take to shift it from where it is now to something that is much more abundant. And what we realized that the shift hadn't happened because of a failure on anybody's part to do anything. The shift hadn't happened because you had what I call the pro-centralization team actively intervening and making money in ways that centralized wealth, but liquidated total wealth that shrunk the pie. So war, organized crime, all these various things. And that's why step one to building a really prosperous society, whether for the middle class in America or people in the emerging markets, is illuminating what the system is and why it is the way it is and answering the question, who's doing this and why are they doing it?
Well, I agree with that.
Transparency, throwing
sunshine on the system and getting people to take enough time to understand it, because we're talking about their welfare. It's not a matter of being informed and being so smart about how things work. I mean, you've got to know that what these people are doing are harming you. And then step two is, well, you know, what can we do?
Right.
And you talk a lot about opting out of the system, and I agree on the benefits of communal and local and being able to do a lot of things on that basis, so you don't need them. You don't need the big banks, and you don't need a lot of these people. You can do a lot of things on your own.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. On with Catherine Austin Titz. Catherine, I want to get into Salieri Inc. and the Salieri Report.
Mm-hmm.
And it's appropriate, especially because you had a third quarter wrap up last night.
Uh-huh.
You use some terms that I think are so important. You talk about a financial coup d'etat, global financial coup d'etat, the slow burn, the tapeworm. And you talk about, I'm sure you went into this last night,
uh-huh.
that everything going on in Congress right now, the legislation, whether we're talking about so-called health care reform, financial reform, my God, their idea of financial reform is to give the bandits more control than they have right now.
Right.
You know, give the Fed more control. They haven't done enough damage, and let's give them more leeway to do more damage.
Well, it's also to shift the regulation of the financial system outside the framework of the Constitution.
Oh, boy.
Because you're basically turning over control of Fed financial regulation to international bodies that aren't subject to the jurisdiction of the Constitution or the democratic framework.
Give listeners an idea just exactly what the Solari report is, based a little bit on what you talked about last night. And again, I mean, this
sure.
is so central. This is absolutely central. I mean, my mind is riveted on this all the time, and I write about it, but I don't understand it the way you do. So I admire.
Well,
I admire. I quote you all the time.
And believe it or not, the Solari report came out of a couple of private situations where I was just briefing people weekly on what was going on and how to use that knowledge to protect themselves. Because I find, you know, part of it is so much information is coming at us, but so much of it is driven by the intention and the economics of the entities that are sending, you know, or sort of putting it out. And so how do you wade through all this stuff and figure out, okay, what's going on and how can I, you know, how can I navigate? And part of it is really understanding what are the information sources you can trust and who are the people you can trust? Sort of how do I know how to navigate? Because it's funny, you know, as you know, we went through, my company went through an extremely difficult period of litigation and all predictions was that you couldn't win in a situation like that and you couldn't survive a situation like that. And, you know, we did. We won the big case. We proved the bandits were wrong. We were able to build new businesses and live a reasonably decent life in the middle of it. And everybody kept saying, you know, how do you do that? And I said, I have a good map and I have great sources of information and I have a heightened sense of who you can trust, because a lot of this is just making sure you're networked with, you're doing business with, you're working with great people. So what happened is it took on a life of its own, and so we started the Solari report, which is a little bit like, it's designed to be like a private briefing that CEOs or government officials get, because if you're at the top of business or government, you don't provide your own sort of view of what's going on. You have sources and people, you know, the president will get a briefing from the CIA. And what we do is we do this by bridge call once a week, three times a week. And the first section is called Money and Markets. Now, I should mention, you know, we record it. And so if you're a subscriber, you can listen to it at any time. You can download it. You know, so if you want to listen to it, you know, as you're driving around or traveling, a lot of people listen to them when they're traveling. Or if you want to go back and listen to all the archives, so if you subscribe, you can listen from the beginning of time. And we have four sections. We do Money and Markets, which is a roundup of what happened that week and sort of what you need to know. So it's designed for somebody, if they never watch the financial news, this distillation will kind of tell them the 411 or on what happened this week and what's coming up. Then we have something called Ask Catherine, because I get a large flow of questions from people, and it's a venue where I can just simply give them answers. And usually, Stephen, you know, one person's question is something that everybody needs to know. So that works very well. And then we have Movers and Shakers, where I interview people who I think have a very important message or can inform, take action. For example, one of the ones that's coming up is we're going to do how to protect yourself from identity theft. So it's almost, I try to be a little bit like Yahoo Finance for people who know the real deal. We just had a wonderful one, Lawrence Gonzalez from your area, Chicago. He's the author of Deep Survival. And one of the most important books, I think, to being alive in the 21st century. It's just a marvelous book. It talks about wilderness survival experiences and then discerns the sort of the behavior that is the basis of who makes it and who doesn't. And it's, they're lessons that can apply, you know, in a period of great change and uncertainty, they're lessons that work for everybody. And then finally, one of my favorites is the last section called Let's Go to the Movies. What I've discovered is, if you want to understand how the world works, it's all in the movies. Hollywood has basically explained almost everything. And it's simply a matter of calling out those movies and using them to explain different aspects of what I call life inside the matrix. And I love it because it's entertaining. You know, it's fun and entertaining. Rather than asking people to read thousands of pages of books and do things that are depressing, you know, they can sit down, have dinner, watch an entertaining movie, and aha, they've got it.
The only movie that obviously comes to my mind, it must be 20 years old now, the one with Michael Douglas, what was the name, Wall Street?
Very, very great movie. The best, you know, the single best way to understand the American economy is to take a day, you know, get the family, make popcorn, you know, whatever, and sit down and watch Godfather 1, 2, and 3.
Oh,
right
absolutely.
In sequence.
I mean, absolute
brilliant. And just to understand that it is, if you want to understand the American economy and the model as of that date, there it is.
Well, you know, the classic scene for me in The Godfather was when they were down in Cuba and they brought that birthday cake out. I mean, the symbolism of that cake, carving up the cake.
They're carving up Cuba.
You get a bigger slice or do you get a smaller slice?
My favorite scene is that because Michael has this myth, you know, his mistake, and it's a very common mistake, is he thinks if he just keeps working his way up the hierarchy, it'll get to a place that's clean. And, of course, it's the opposite. But when he's being deterred on his takeover of the corporation and the Vatican's playing games with him, he says, the higher I go, the crookeder it gets. And in fact, you know, Godfather 3 was the one that didn't win the critical acclaim from the movie industry of the others, but it's the one that is the most useful in understanding the economy. So, but of course, you want to sit down and watch them all in sequence because it's a masterpiece. There's so many others, and really, if you want to get, most people are busy. They do not have the time to consume huge amounts of depressing information. At the same time, it's really important that we understand how reality outside the matrix works. Because otherwise we're going to get bankrupted or tricked or whatever. So the question is, how do you fill out your map? How do you build your map and do it in a way which is timely and uses as little of your time as possible? And that's why I keep coming back to the movies, because I just think it's a great way for busy people to make progress in understanding what's going on.
Talk about the terms I mentioned and how important they are, and maybe you can blend it into some of what you talked about last night on your quarterly report.
Sure. I started in the 90s documenting and illuminating the fact that trillions of dollars was going missing from the federal government. And if you do a search for missing money, the Solari website will come up very much at the top. Because we've done so much documentation about between that fiscal 1998 and fiscal 2002, $4 trillion went missing. Now, that's nothing compared to the bailouts, but at the time, $4 trillion was a huge amount of money. In 1 year, we had $2.3 trillion disappear from the Pentagon, which was more than all the taxes paid by Americans individually that year. At the time, I think it was about $1.6 trillion. So what I finally kept trying to tell people is, look, When this much money can be stolen, then you have a financial coup d'etat, because you're talking about enough money to buy everybody and everything. Especially when your enemy can take all your money and then turn around and use it to buy you, bribe you, or pay people to off you, then there is no government and there is no law. So finally, I was sitting, I tell the story, the number one hit getter on my blog is a post called Financial Coup d'Etat, which I wrote a while ago. And it tells the story of sitting in London. I was giving a paper at a conference, an investment conference in London. And we're sitting there with the ancestors looking down from us, you know, the oil paintings in the big, heavy wooden mahogany boardroom. And I gave a paper called The Myth of the Rule of Law about how the HUD and the mortgage programs were literally being used to drain money out of the middle class and out of communities. And money was being, $59 billion disappeared from HUD. And so all this missing money. And then John Laughlin, who's a wonderful reporter in London, got up and told the story of the privatization in Eastern Europe. And then Anne Williamson got up and went through sort of the rape of Russia. She'd been a reporter for the Wall Street Journal in Russia. Amazing, amazing journalists and work. And what we realized was we were talking about the same process, the same models of theft, the same people, the same investors, the same universities. It was one game. It was global. And people weren't seeing it because we were in different places. So John was in Eastern Europe, Anne was in Russia, I was in the United States. And so I write about this and tell, that's one of the stories. There are other stories of how literally this model of centralizing wealth and using fraud and all sorts of dirty tricks and corruption to do it was a global plan. And it was being implemented globally, and it's called financial coup d'etat, and it's remarkable. But that's really what has been going on, and you see it. I describe it in financial terms. When you, if you see that Sir James Goldsmith video, he describes it not so much in financial terms, although he gets into the finance, but in the centralization of agriculture, which is even more dangerous than the centralization of finance.
I read your article when you were in London and the talk you gave, and I quoted from it a couple of times. Oh, it's great. I mean, it was stunning. I just had to pluck out some quotes from that article. Explain the tapeworm and the slow burn, Catherine.
Right. The tapeworm is I was sitting at it with I was at a natural. I have a wonderful natural health clinic in Northern Virginia, outside of Washington, that I used to go to when I was dealing with all the physical harassment connected to the litigation. And she started to explain to me how a tapeworm works. She said it injects into your body a chemical that makes you crave what's good for the tapeworm and bad for you. So you eat what feeds the tapeworm instead of yourself, and you slowly, you slowly lose your health. You can even die. But it's you who's facilitating the process, because you're doing what's good for the tapeworm and bad for you. And I thought, you know, that describes our whole society.
Well, and it sure does.
Yeah, and I started to refer to the economy as the tapeworm economy, because it's the story I told about my wonderful pastor in Atlanta. You know, we're facilitating this. We're putting our money into the big banks. We're buying stocks and all the companies that are behaving this way. We are turning on and watching the media of the people who are lying to us, and we are honoring as celebrities the people who are most effective at stealing our money and killing us. There was a wonderful article in the latest Vanity Fair by Bartlett and Steele, who are really the top, I think, just about the top investigative reporters in this country, and it was all about the money that had been pulled out in the TARP bailout. And then several pages away was a list that Vanity Fair had put together about the new establishment. And it was basically saying, okay, these are the winners. These are the guys who rule the roost. These are the top guys in the new structure. And it's all the people who got the money on the bailout. And the message was crime pays. So the tapeworm economy is an economy where we constantly, you know, take in these injections of chemicals from the tapeworm, whether it's media or what we learn at university, et cetera, and then proceed to turn around and allow this tapeworm to harvest us. And we're very much complicit in the process. And I think it's important to see that, because that's where we get our power. As soon as we see how we feed the tapeworm, then we can withdraw in a way that starts to build equity and wealth and knowledge for us. So the slow burn, when I started to sort of network and work with people who were illuminating what was going on with the corruption, I started to bump into all sorts of people starting in about 1998 who were predicting that the financial system would crash momentarily. I'm sure you've run into this too, Stephen. You know, it's the end of the world is coming, it's going to come tomorrow, it's crashing, it's whatever.
It sure felt that way, Catherine.
Well, you know, this is, you know, these folks have been predicting that the crash is momentary now for 10 years, but the crash never comes. So I kept trying to tell them the crash isn't going to happen. There isn't going to be a crash. And finally, I needed to coin a phrase that described what was happening, called the slow burn. And the slow burn is a way of managing the economy where you hold up financial assets. So you subsidize financial assets by essentially liquidating life. So rather than have the stock market crash, you have 9/11, or you have the war in Afghanistan, or you have the war in Iraq, or, you know, you have a pandemic, and, you know, and you do a series of things that continually increase your ability to control the flows of money and resources in a economy, whether it's global or local. And I think part of the reason it's hard for most people to fathom the slow burn is because it implies a level of invisible control, you know, aka the matrix, that they can't fathom exists. If you've been a successful bond trader on Wall Street or in the investment community, you can't imagine that it's this controlled and you haven't seen it. So the slow burn is kind of what's been going on. One of the biggest things that happened in the third quarter of this year was the slow burn just kept on slow burning. And you know, what we're watching is a huge number of people being sort of thrown overboard off the Titanic. And people tend to think if my world is crashing, that the system's crashing. Not true. The system is not crashing, and the reason it's not crashing is it's subsidizing itself with the end of your world.
Oh, absolutely. We can dump lots of people overboard, Catherine, and it won't hurt these people. It will help these people. I mean,
right.
They're just sucking our wealth away, and
right.
we end up overboard. One more break.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Welcome back to the News Hour, final segment. The hour always disappears, Catherine. I think if I had 2 hours, it would feel the same way. Let me mention briefly that, your website is solari.com. I have it bookmarked, of course, and I urge listeners to bookmark it as well. And you run Solari, Inc., focusing on preserving family wealth, individual wealth, and doing it ethically. And you've got your three times a quarterly.
Yeah, Solari does two things. We run a blog that is, we're covering, it's open, it's free, where we daily describe what's going on in the markets, what we think is relevant. And you can get there by solari.com/blog. At the Solari website, there's a wealth of free information, how to find a good local bank, all sorts of stuff about how to help you deal with this. We have a wonderful silver and gold payment calculator, which can help you sort of translate back and forth between dollars and coins, you know, if you want to start transacting with coins in a much more liquid way.
Catherine,
and then we send out updates. You can sign up on our update list, and we'll keep you posted on what's going on. We do events, and then, of course, we do this. The main activity is we do the Solari report. We try and brief you and help you sort of navigate this and protect your money.
And you do it three times a month, not your quarterly updates, but you do
yeah.
this three times a month. Oh, I am on your distribution list, and I get your alerts, and I love them. I jump on them every time I see
uh-huh.
them.
Oh, well, that's wonderful.
Can I mention another alert I got during the commercial break?
Uh-huh.
A wonderful alert for me personally. It's a New York Times alert, and the headline reads, are you ready for this?
Uh-huh.
Chicago loses bid for 2016 Olympic Games in first round of voting.
Really?
Oh, I'm absolutely ecstatic. The reason I'm ecstatic is...
Right, it's terrible for the citizens.
Oh, well, you know what happens, Catherine. They rip up poor neighborhoods. They displace poor people. More personal lives destroyed so they can build stadiums, infrastructure, whatever they do when they get a big project like this going. And what's sad is that I heard that the city spent as much as $100 million to lure the games to Chicago. Now, just think what that $100 million could have done for the people of Chicago.
Oh, my word.
It will never be done. And now they have even less money than they had before, and they are struggling. They have to give furlough people a day a week or something because they can't meet the payroll, and they're blowing $100 million to get the Olympics in 2016. Anyway, let me let you finish up with more comments on the Solari report.
Well, you know, there's a squeeze coming. Well, we talk about this a lot. There's a squeeze coming at the state and local level, Steve, because so much of the revenues at the state and local level come from small business. And part of that is because the growth in the economy, the incremental jobs have been coming from two places. One is military and the other is small business. And if you look at what's been going on, it's at the national level, you're seeing an enforcement and legislative assault designed to basically shut down private property and destroy small business. And that, of course, is going to squeeze the state and local economics. And at some point, they're going to have to make a decision. Are they going to act to protect legally the lifeblood of their own financial situation and soundness? So there's a real end game coming here. And, you know, the squeeze in the third quarter was bad. It's going to get much worse in the fourth quarter. And between now, you know, sometime in the next 18 months, you're going to start to see, here in the South, you started to see more and more groups pop up that are organizing for secession.
Oh, I would love to see something like that. Oh, my goodness. But if Illinois did that, Catherine, we're out of time. I wish we could go on. So much more that I wanted to talk about, we didn't get a chance to. But there's always another time, and it is. I thank you greatly for coming on.
Have a wonderful day.
Oh, you too, Catherine. It was a great hour. I know my listeners love it. Today is Friday. Join us again on Monday. Another full week of live programming. Please join us.